So let's get started. Welcome, everybody. My name is Marius Buster. I'm working as a technical evangelist and cloud architect in a team that is called Windows Azure ISV Incubation Team. Pretty complex team title. It's kind of a global team, so I'm reporting directly to Redmond into the global ISV team. But I spend about 45% of my time here in Switzerland working with ISVs, independent software vendors, on migrating their existing products to become software as a service solutions running in the cloud, or building out new products that run on our cloud platform, Windows Azure. And actually, Windows Azure is exactly the topic that we are talking about today. So I want to give you a pretty broad overview with a couple of deeper demos, so that you understand what our platform is all about, what it has to offer, and where its strengths and maybe also its weaknesses are. So that's the idea of this presentation. Just for me to have a basic understanding of your existing knowledge, who knows what Windows Azure is? Okay, so it's okay. It's I'd say 30%. So who of those 30%, of course, only did work with Windows Azure already? One, two. Okay, so that's good, actually. That's exactly what this session is all about. It's about giving you an overview on what we are talking when we talk about Windows Azure. So I've structured that presentation with kind of an introduction session on cloud computing in general, and then we dig into the role of Windows Azure in that world of cloud computing. That's the idea. So when we talk about cloud computing, I feel myself very familiar with the sense of what the people's understanding of cloud computing is. You have a question or? Okay. About 10 years ago, we were in a similar situation with a topic called service-oriented architecture, right? Everyone had some understanding of SOA, but everyone had kind of a different understanding. And I have the feeling it's kind of similar with cloud computing. Everyone has heard about the term already. Everyone has some kind of vague understanding of what we are talking about. So I thought it's a good idea to just put my understanding of cloud computing on the table, because it's kind of my understanding, and therefore it influences how I present the rest of the topics that we are talking about. So when I look at cloud computing, I'd say it's nothing else than a specific flavor of computing, a specific way of operating and providing software as services to our customers. As services is one interesting and important part, because it's really all about, when we talk about software that is running in the cloud, it's all about providing services to our customers and end users without having them the need to understand any of the technical details of how to operate those services, how to monitor those services, and so on and so forth. It's like in electricity, right? If we want power, we just plug in our plug into the power plug, our cable into the power plug, and that's it, right? Similar it is with services offered through the cloud, right? I have, for example, a CRM software as a service application like Salesforce, like CRM Online, Microsoft Dynamics CRM Online, and things like that. If I want to use that, I don't care if I need this or that server, if I need this or that whatever infrastructure. All I do care about is signing up for an account and then start using the software. Right? And of course, there are different levels of abstractions on how you can look at this. You can look at this as a developer's perspective, where you say, I want to consume some services that enable me to provide added value to my applications. But you can also look at it from the side of an end user and say, I just want to have an application. That's more or less the software as a service part, right? So from that perspective, it's really very much like a utility, such as power, right? Where the electricity manufacturer takes care of producing it and shipping it, and we just consume it through the power lines. Here it's the internet, right? There are some specific characteristics that are associated with cloud computing and that make cloud computing, that form the nature of cloud computing, say it like that. And that's first, it's elastic and dynamic, right? I can scale up and scale down, or scale out and scale down my resources based on my ongoing needs at the time when I have those needs. Like, for example, if I need additional compute power because I'm doing the end of year business plan calculations and I need additional resources, I allocate those resources in the cloud. Yeah. Whereas the cloud is nothing else than a big data center provided by a big manufacturer at the end of the day from a practical point of view, right? Or maybe it's several data centers that form out the platform, as it is the case, for example, with all the bigger vendors. So you consume resources when you need them and you release the resources when you don't need them anymore, right? For compute, you could say if I need more compute power, I allocate additional machines. If I don't need them anymore, get rid of them. And I don't care what happens to them. I just don't want to pay for it anymore, right? And that's another characteristic, and that's pay-per-use. So you only pay for what you really use. That's a big difference to on-premises data centers, because when you have purchased the big hardware and the big servers, they run. And whether you use them up to their full extent and power or not doesn't make a difference. They run. Here, I just pay for what I really use. If it's 1 terabyte of storage, I pay X Swiss francs. If it's just 0.5 terabyte of storage, I just pay half the price. And that's ongoing on a daily or hourly or even on a minute per minute basis, right? So pay per use. And then scalability as one of the last characteristics. So given that we usually consume those resources in very, very big data centers, really big data centers. For example, our Dublin data center hosts 600,000 machines, which are, by the way, operated by 5 people. And 600,000 machines for my web application and for my blogging platform is something like infinite, right? I mean, I have more than enough web servers in that data center that I can make use of. Even better, from a cloud vendor's perspective, and that's a characteristic behind the scenes, they share the resources between the customers, because it's not very probable that I will require high load at the same time as you, for example, right? Probability is very low for that. So we could run on the same resources in such a big data center. So shared pool of resources, it's a characteristic behind the scene. So that's kind of my understanding of cloud computing. The most important pieces for me, it's I consume services like a utility, so I don't care about the details, and I just pay for what I use, and if I need more, I request more, and I get it within minutes, and if not, I release it within minutes. Okay, so when I look at it, I say we have different angles at which we can look at cloud computing, depending on who we are. If we are an end user, we are rather in the software as a service world. We want to consume applications. That's something that we have been doing for several years, actually. I mean, who of you has an online email account at the service like GMX or Hotmail? Or Gmail or whatever, right? I mean, that's software as a service. So we have been doing that for a while. It just came into the business when Salesforce, for the first time in the history, came up with a business software that is consumed in the same style. Like you register, you pay per month, and you have your CRM online system somewhere in a data center that you don't see, right? Because it's not your server room. The other extreme is infrastructure as a service. So target group here is IT professionals, those people who are managing machines, virtual machines, right? So infrastructure as a service essentially means you go to a cloud vendor like Microsoft or Amazon and you request one or more virtual machines. We provide everything to you that is needed to run those virtual machines, but you are responsible for the virtual machine. You need to manage the operating system, like do the patch management, do the updates, manage the networks, blah, blah, blah. Yeah? So you are responsible for your virtual machines. And then there is something that is in between of those two worlds, where we don't speak about finished applications, but we also don't really want to care about managing machines anymore. What we want to care about is our applications and services that we as software vendors are building and selling to our customers. And that's where platform as a service is based in. So essentially it means you create an application, you create a deployable package, you give it to the cloud vendor, and the cloud vendor, given the needs that you have specified in that package, fires up the infrastructure for you. And that's it. You don't care about virtual machines. Although behind the scenes, most of those pieces will be operated in virtual machines. You don't care about these virtual machines or about most of the factors of those virtual machines. So these are the typical flavors of cloud computing that we have to deal with. So now coming to Windows Azure, what is it? It's Microsoft's public cloud platform that provides infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. As simple as that. Is it software as a service? No. When we talk about software as a service in the Microsoft world, we speak Office 365. We speak Microsoft Dynamics CRM Online and these kind of things. Azure provides a platform for IT professionals and software developers to run their workloads in our data centers. Our data centers is exactly the next point. Where are those data centers? Well, we have 8 mega data centers. These are the blue spots here on this map. And then we have 28 additional content network distribution nodes, which are partially our own data centers and partially data centers shared with others. The mega data centers, those blue bullets here, those blue points, these are those data centers that run the complete infrastructure. So in those data centers, we run Windows Azure, the platform and anything that is needed to operate our cloud environment. We run Bing Maps there, and Bing partially runs on Azure. We run Office 365, and Office 365 in the newest version is very well integrated with Azure. So these big things are operated in those blue bullets. The green bullets are just CDN nodes where when you put large amounts of data in one of those mega data centers, you can configure them for a content delivery network so that they get distributed across the world. Looking at Europe, we have 2 mega data centers in Europe. One is based in Dublin, and the other one is based in Amsterdam. And each of those data centers has approximately, I mean, some of them are larger, some of them are smaller. When we talk about Chicago, for example, we have 800,000 or 900,000 machines, at least to my latest knowledge, right? Might be that it's a little bit bigger already. In Dublin, we have 600,000. That I know for sure because I've been there 1 month ago. And I don't know how much we have in Amsterdam, right? So, but that's kind of when we talk about Windows Azure, this is where it runs. Okay, so looking at Windows Azure, I say we primarily cover infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. But we cover it at different levels. The first thing that we have is Windows Azure Virtual Machines. That is something we have introduced this summer in June 2012 as a preview. And it allows you essentially to run Windows virtual machines and Linux virtual machines in our environment. Linux and Windows. Yeah. The point here is we provide you the platform to run those VMs. We provide you a management portal where you can create your new VMs and kind of get RDP connections to them so that you can manage them through remote desktop and things like that. But then inside of the virtual machine, it's up to you. We don't care anymore. Yeah? If something goes wrong inside of your VM, we don't care. We just make sure that the VM runs. And what happens inside of your VM is up to you. You need to look at Windows event logs and things like that. We don't do that. We don't look into those VMs. So next step would be platform as a service. And that's where we actually originally coming from and where we kind of pioneered as compared to other vendors like Amazon, AWS, who pioneered in the infrastructure as a service world. And that's cloud services. In cloud services, you focus on your application. You create deployment packages locally, debug them with Visual Studio, upload them, and we create the infrastructure for you. But still, cloud services provides you with certain levels of control on networking, like which load balanced endpoints do you want to share with the public, which internal endpoints do you want to enable for communicating between your tiers in your application and things like that. That has essentially been built for building high scale, high available applications like Facebook, eBay, and things like that. And by the way, parts of eBay, the special shops for selling the old iPads are running, for example, on cloud services in Azure. So, next one, websites. It's also platform as a service, but much simpler than that. That is fairly complex, and we'll look at it later in a little bit greater level of detail. So the entry level and the learning curve is pretty steep for this one. You need to think about working in load balanced environments, being stateless, re-architecting parts of your applications to be asynchronous and things like that. Here, you don't need to care about that. Here, you care about web applications. So if you just build a web application with a database in the background, Windows Azure websites is the right thing to do. You essentially build ASP.NET, ASP, classic ASP, PHP or Node.js web application. You upload it with FTP or web deploy, and you're done. Yeah. And then we have something similar for those who are building applications for devices, where the primary focus is on the device and not on the backend, but you need a backend for storing some data or something like that. That's what Windows Azure Mobile Services is all about. These are the different paradigms that Windows Azure offers for running your applications and operating your applications in our cloud platform. In addition to those, these are the big hosting environments for applications. In addition to those, we have what we call application building block services. These are assets and services that we offer in our platform that you can leverage and build into your applications by using some APIs. All of these services do offer, and we look at some of those in this session later, all of these offer some kind of HTTP-based API or other standards-based APIs that you can make use of in your application to implement pieces of your functionality. So, and of course, as we have these building blocks that have APIs and things like that, we also need SDKs. So when you go to windowsazure.com, and then you click on the top on develop, you'll find lots of SDKs for different languages and platforms for download. So of course we have one for the .NET framework, which is pretty obvious. That is a set of .NET libraries that you can use in your .NET applications that encapsulates the access to those application building block services essentially, and that encapsulates some APIs that you or that we have made available in Windows Azure to get access to information about the runtime environment where your application actually is running. And then we provide the same thing, for example, for Java, PHP, Python, and Node.js. These are the primary platforms that we currently support and where we ship SDKs and platforms. But of course, as it's all HTTP-based, you can make use of it from every platform. It's just a little bit harder without these SDKs. But essentially, it's all HTTP-based. And we know that we will not be successful with a public cloud platform if we don't support other platforms. And that's the reason why we are putting a whole lot of effort into making sure that we are as open as possible and as platform independent and interoperable as possible with our cloud platform. Okay, so let's start digging into some of the details by looking at some of the pieces that we offer. And through some of the pieces, we have to walk through a little bit faster. And for others, we can spend some time and do some demos and do a little bit of programming. So let's start with looking at the building blocks. One of the building blocks that I would like to highlight is Azure SQL Database. It's essentially SQL Server in the cloud, right? And when we look at it, how it looks like, so we stop that, and what we do is we just look at this service and what it means and what it is and how we can make use of it. So the first thing that you have to know and understand, is if you want to start, you go to www.windowsazure.com. And then here you have free trial. And with that, you can sign up for a free trial. You need a Microsoft account, formerly known as Windows Live ID. So from time to time, we have to rename that stuff. And what you need is a credit card. But that credit card in the free trial is not charged. So we have a payment cap, right? So you get a number of free resources like 750 compute hours, 10 websites, 10 mobile services, one SQL database. And if you want to get more, because you want to try some super high performance, blah, 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 whatever thing, then you have to explicitly, in that free trial program, remove the payment cap from your credit card, and then you can consume more. If you consume that, you get it for 3 months, approximately 90 days. If you consume more than that in a month, then we just stop you and give you the option to remove the payment cap, and then the normal pay-per-use things start. But it's pretty easy to sign up. Apart from those two things, there are no requirements. And when you have done that, then you can go to manage.windowsazure.com, which is the management portal. So in my case, I have a couple of subscriptions that are associated with my Live ID. These are all the services that I'm running at the moment in the cloud. And the first thing that we would like to look at is Azure SQL Database. So here is a SQL Database node. And here I can manage my SQL databases, right? So what I'm going to do is now I will create a new SQL server and I will deploy a new database to that SQL server instance. So let's create a new SQL server. At login name is mszmaster, password is whatever, password1. I use that for all of my accounts. So we deploy it, for example, to North Europe, which is Dublin. So now it creates a server for me. But we'll see a server is not the same as a server in our data center. It's just a logical concept. In that server, I can create a database. So I can go to that server. The name of the server is ED1D blah blah blah. That's automatically generated. You cannot change that. And here I have Node database. So these are all of my databases actually. That's the wrong server. This is the one that I've just created. So here, databases, I can create a new SQL database. Yeah. So specify the size of the database. There are two types of editions, web editions and business editions. Business editions goes up to a maximum of 150 gigabytes, and we'll see why that's the case in a second when we go back to the sites then. So instead of doing that, what I will do is I will fire up a tool that we all know, which is SQL Server Management Studio. Because we want to manage that server from the tools that we are familiar with. So first of all, I connect to my local SQL server running here because I want to migrate something into the cloud. And then I would like to connect to this SQL server. And here you see the full name, the full qualified DNS name. It's always servername.database.windows.net. Okay. So let's connect to this server. Connect database engine, whack. Then I select SQL Server authentication because we don't have Windows authentication through the web. We set MSZ master, we set password 1, and then we need to click onto options and make sure that we check this here, right? Because Azure SQL Database does not allow you to connect to databases without encryption at the protocol level. Okay, good. If I click connect now, this would not work. It would fail. And the reason is very simple. We need to configure some sort of security on that server. We need to make sure that only those clients that we want to be able to connect can connect to that server. Therefore, I click on my server, I go to configure, and there you see allowed IP addresses. And it says, you currently have that IP address. If you want to allow that to connect directly, then you need to tell me. So I say, yes, please, and say save. Yeah. So it uses an IP address restriction-based security mechanism to make sure that not every client can connect to my database here. And now we can go back and say connect. And et voila. So it's, I mean, when you look at it, there are not so many options as we have up there. And that's because many of those options are managed by us, by Windows Azure, right? We manage your database. You don't have full control of your database. Give up that dream when you are in that platform. Yeah. So we manage that database. And what that means, we'll take a look at in a second when we draw a couple of sketches. Yeah. So, okay, so now let's do the following. Let's pick a database like this GeoNode. Yeah, and there is a nice go away. There is a nice option in SQL Server Management Studio 2012 under tasks. You can say deploy database to SQL Azure. It still says SQL Azure. We are asked to name it Azure SQL Database. That's the correct phrasing, thanks to our colleagues from marketing. So we connect again, make sure that we have checked the encrypt button, connect. We want to create a new database called GeoNodes on that target server. Next, finish. So what it's doing now is it looks at the schema of the database, it analyzes whether the database is compatible with Azure SQL Database or not, and if so, it starts uploading the schema and uploading the data into the cloud, and then I have my database in the cloud. So while it's doing that, I'll go back to the slides and make a little drawing. So when I just go into the presentation mode. So when we look at Azure SQL Database, what we have is we have our client, that's this. Yeah. And then we have Azure in Dublin. Yeah. That's this. That's our data center. In our data center, we have lots of machines, and we have some components that are sitting around those machines. So these are the machines, yeah, and these are those components around. What we have in every Azure data center in a scale-out, high-available fashion is a big, big cluster of Windows servers that runs a software that is called Fabric Controller. The Fabric Controller is responsible for managing the cloud environment and monitoring the cloud environment. He is responsible for making sure that all these machines are up and running at every point in time. Yeah. Good. Then, in case of Azure SQL Database, we have what we call a TDS gateway. That TDS gateway is the piece of software that manages our credentials, the SQL username password credentials, understands which credentials need to go to which server, and it manages those IP firewall restrictions. So now, when we create a database or when we execute any kind of statement against Azure SQL Database, what we are using here is TDS, tabular data streams, right? That's what SQL Server was used to for a long time, right? So now assume that we have created a database. So what the TDS gateway does, it checks whether the client has access to that SQL Azure Azure SQL Database subscription and account, right? And if so, he redirects to the machine that hosts the database that we have created, right? So now, if we, for example, execute a create database against this here, it creates the database on one node, but what it does at the same time is it creates a replica of the database on two other nodes in our data center that are located in different places in the data center. So now, whenever you execute an insert or a database transaction across the wire here, independent of how big that transaction is, how many statements it complies, it consists of, and so on and so forth, independent of what you are doing, we make sure that every transaction gets replicated real time to those other nodes. So that if your primary node fails, next time you get automatically redirected to one of your secondaries. And that secondary replicates then to this one, and we make sure that there is another replica available. So that is what Azure SQL Database is doing behind the scenes. So it is an infrastructure to provide you databases in a high available and failure tolerant way. So now let's go back. So yes, keep those ink stuff and see if that's done. Yes, it is done. So everything succeeded. And now we can go back to our management studio, close the local database, make a refresh here, and we have geo nodes here. So now when you look at the options that you have here, it's not that much, right? For example, if you say create table here, then you'll get this instead of the nice UI. I mean, these are some limitations that are currently sitting on top of this system. At the same time, when you say you want to insert, you need to do it like this. Yeah. So execute the script and insert something in there. But we skip that for the time now. Okay, so now we have a database in the cloud. I could also manage that database through the cloud. So when I go here to databases now, we have that geo nodes. I can click on the database. And I can click on manage URL. So we have it down here, manage URL. So then it fires up a Silverlight-based portal where I can do pretty much. So I can do a couple of things there that are nicer. Let's say it like that. MSZMaster and pass at word one. It's good that the wireless network is that slow, so you can't go to my database that easily. So now it's connecting through the Silverlight client that sometimes takes a while, and then I have a Silverlight-based UI that allows me to work with my data and work with my tables. I even can create tables through that when I go to design. That's maybe a little bit weird from the user experience. If you want to insert data into one of those tables, you need to go to design. So let's say I want to edit my notes table, and I want to edit the data, then I go to data. And then I can, for example, change my data here by saying Tech Days Lausanne and say save. And then it says error, incorrect syntax near where. That's interesting. So you see, it's better to manage your thing through the Management Studio. Okay, so let's move forward, that we don't lose too much time. So there are a couple of other building block services like this. I need to pick one of those. They are all listed in the slides, and you'll get the slides anyway. The next one that I would like to take a look at is storage. So what we provide in addition to these relational database management system is also a storage system that is more kind of a storage system optimized for big binary data, large, so binary large objects, blobs, for NoSQL table storage, and for asynchronous queue-based communication between compute that we have running in the cloud. And that what I want to highlight here is, for example, the blob store that allows you to store terabytes of data in our data center. It works pretty much the same way as SQL, just that it provides an HTTP-based interface instead of a tabular data stream based protocol, which is the SQL Server protocol. But behind the scenes, for example, when you upload files into a blob store, what we do is we create three replicas in different places in our storage system. So that if one of those storage systems fails, there is still another one. In addition to that, for blob storage, we also offer that content delivery network and a geo distribution across two data centers for disaster recovery cases, right? So when we look at blob storage, then you manage it in the portal here through the storage interface here. And what we usually have here is a set of storage accounts. So you can create a number of storage accounts that are isolated storage areas with a separate means of authentication, separate authentication credentials, where you can store data for specific applications. So typically you create that storage account by just saying in the portal on the bottom here, create storage, quick create, and then you give it a URL like Tech Days Lausanne. That is then, that gets a URL of techdayslausanne.core.windows.net. And then you have HTTP get post put delete to upload and download content into that storage account. So that's pretty much what I wanted to say here. And when you look at it, there are so many topics that I would like to cover. So that's kind of storage from a building block services perspective. So what I would like to do now, instead of walking through the rest of the, and I expected that this will happen because we have so many things to show, instead of walking through the rest of the slides, which you all get, if it's fine for you, I just show what virtual machines means, what websites means, and maybe what cloud services means. So is that? Because you can read the slides afterwards. So now let's move forward. Let me do the following. Let's pick this as the part for the remaining agenda. Let's look at virtual machines now. So virtual machines, pretty simple. Here in the portal, there is a section for virtual machines. And as this is in preview, what you need to do before you get access to these preview features is to sign up for them. You can do that by going, after you have signed up with your Live ID, to account.windowsazure.com. So now we have www.windowsazure.com, account.windowsazure.com, and manage.windowsazure.com. So now I sign in with my Live ID. And that's not password word one. That's past $word one. So when you go to account.windowsazure.com, the first thing that you will need to do is select a subscription for which you want to leverage or activate the preview features. So you select the subscription, then you are in this, and then you have your payment overview and things like that. I'm not using it because we have also a corporate subscription that is sponsored by Microsoft for our activities. And then you go to preview features. And then you see the things that are currently in preview. That's media services. That's a platform for companies who want to build end-to-end media workflows, including encoding, on-demand live and live streaming. Mobile services, I've mentioned that. Virtual machines and websites. And all you need to do is click that Try It Now button, and then it takes about a couple of minutes. We say maximum 24 hours, but I did not wait 24 hours for it. So it's activated fairly fast, and then you have access to those preview features, right? So when you want to create a virtual machine now, all you do is you say new, compute, virtual machine, and then there are two things, quick create and from gallery. And we pick the from gallery so that you see the full scale of that. When you go into the gallery, then you see all the operating systems that we support as virtual machines. On Windows Azure as guest operating systems. And for example, what I have here is a Windows Server 2012. I say next. I name it MSZ Tech Days VM. I give it a password. Now I give it a stronger password. So now I can say, is that a virtual machine that lives for its own? Or does that virtual machine work together with other virtual machines? Like if you want to build out a more complex network topology just of virtual machines, then you select this. If you want to have it even more flexible with VPN connections, then we have something that we call Windows Azure Virtual Networking that allows you to create your own private network in our cloud that you then can connect through VPN with your on-premises network. So I say that's my standalone, MSZ Tech Days Lausanne. VM is the name of the VM for the public DNS name. Then I select the storage account. I say I want to have that in North Europe stored. The virtual hard disk is stored in blob storage for those things. And here I also have a virtual network that I've created can VPN into my on-premises Hyper-V infrastructure that I have running at home. But we skip that for today, and we say we just want to host that virtual machine in North Europe. And then we say next. Availability set allows you to create high availability solutions where you run two or more VMs in a high available environment so that if one VM crashes, the other VM can take over and is not impacted by that crash. So that means all virtual machines that you deploy into a single availability set are deployed in different locations in the data center. Different locations means locations that have their own power outage system, their own network connectivity, and so on and so forth, so that if one part of the data center crashes, the other part is not impacted by that, and so the virtual machines are distributed across those areas, right? So, and then we say finish. Yeah. So now it takes up to 15 minutes. So we have 12 minutes left. We'll see if the VM is ready at that point in time. But I've created another VM, of course, because the provisioning sometimes takes fairly long. So I connect to that VM, and you'll see it's just a VM. Yeah. So and inside of that VM, you do whatever. So, yes, no, yes, we did it. Enough clicks. So it's just a VM, as you can see. That is a Windows Server 2008 R2. And then you do whatever you want. But there is one thing you need to be aware of. When you look at the drives, by default, you always get two drives. One is the local disk drive. That's where the operating system sits. And this local disk drive is actually stored in the Windows Azure Blob storage. That means this disk is persistent. You never lose data out of that disk, independent of what happens with the virtual machine. When the virtual machine gets moved from one part of the data center into another part of the data center, because for whatever reason, like for example, we do host operating system updates and we want to do that without leading to a downtime for you, what we do then is we spin up a new version of your VM somewhere else and we move you there. Yeah. And that happens automatically behind the scenes. And neither you nor me can do anything against that. Yeah. That's auto-managed cloud environment. So when that happens, what is on C is not lost. When that happens, what is on D, which is called temporary storage, is lost. Because temporary storage is a hard disk that resides on the local physical host machine that hosts that virtual machine. And that host machine can change over time, depending on whatever auto-management operation happens in our data center. That is very important to understand. Now, you could ask, well, I mean, with 30 gigs of storage, I can't really do a lot, right? So what you do when you need to do more, and what is also, by the way, a recommendation, is that you attach data disks. So you click the attach button, okay, so let me refresh that. Sometimes the portal, by the way, is also still in preview. So sometimes, and it's, I mean, it's all HTML5. So it runs on whatever device you use. Now it works. Attach empty disk. Attach empty disk. So with that, I can attach additional disks. I think it's up to 16 drives. Each can have 1 terabyte. To your virtual machine, and on those disks you should put your SQL Server databases, your persistent data, and whatsoever. Yeah. And that also sits in Azure storage. What does that mean? I mean, think about it. We said Azure storage, Azure Blob storage, is replicated 3 times inside of a data center and is geo-replicated into a data center that sits in the same region. That's also important, that sits in the same region. So data that is stored in Amsterdam gets geo-replicated to Dublin. Data that sits in Dublin gets geo-replicated to Amsterdam, but the data that is stored in European data centers does never leave Europe. Okay, so that's virtual machines. Now let's go to at least one platform as a service bit, and that's websites. And let me start doing the following. Let me start my favorite tool, Visual Studio. Now we are switching gears now. We are in platform as a service. We covered virtual machines. Sorry for jumping a little bit fast, but I at least want to have one PaaS bit that I want to show you. New project. So what I create is a new ASP.NET MVC application. I store it on C, demos, enter, select folder, and we name it Tech Days Lausanne. And we say OK. We say it's going to be a basic MVC4 application. We don't care about the nice and pretty design. OK. So now we create this. I do my local development. I create my MVC application. I go to my local database and all these kind of things. So it takes a while. So now we have my MVC application. First thing I'll do, I do all local. Yeah? So nothing related to Windows Azure. First thing I'll do is I'll create an ADO.NET entity data model to access my database. And that's going to be the GeoNodes database that we have locally here. So ADO.NET, and then we have this nice thing here, GeoNodes model, enter, and we generate it from our GeoNodes database. New connection, local, SQL Express. Then we pick one of those databases, that's GeoNodes, that's the one that we migrated, test, fine. Next. That is not a typical Microsoft wizard. It's not next, 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 finish. Finish. So. Now it creates that nice model for me. So what I do now is I compile that. Compile it. So next step, I'm in the ASP.NET MVC world here, so I need to write some code. So I create a new controller that is called Home Controller. Home Controller. And in that Home Controller, we have an index method. And there we say GeoNodes model entities. So that's the one that has been generated by the ADO.NET entity data model. DB context equals new GeoNodes entities, then I say nodes equals db context dot not change tracker dot nodes dot to list, and we pass that to our view nodes. So next we will create a view that sits in the views folder for our home controller home, and we create a view called index. Add new view, we call it index. It's going to use the Razor engine. It's going to be based on my node class that I've just generated through the ADO.NET entity data model, and it's going to be a list template, and we say add. Whack. So now it generated a nice little view for me, Control Shift B, and we try that in Internet Explorer locally and see if it works. So then we have done our local development. And hopefully it works, crossing the fingers. Okay, that looks good. Yeah, that's the data that is stored in there. So what we do now is we go back to Azure. So we deal with our application, right? We don't care about virtual machines now anymore. That's plain old stuff. So now in Azure, I will create a website and say that's going to be named Tech Days Lausanne dot azurewebsites.net, and it's going to be in North Europe, and we say create that website. So now it's creating that website for me. While it's creating that website, I will dig a little bit more into that second option, create with database, because here you see a couple of more details. I can create a blank website and connect it to one of my existing databases, which is what we'll do, because we have migrated the database before. What you also can do is you can create a new website and create a new SQL database, or, and now it gets interesting, or create a new MySQL database. So that's also something that we have introduced with the June release. We work together with partners that do provide services that we do not provide by ourselves on Azure. Yeah. And here we have one partner. When you click this, for example, here we have one partner that is called ClearDB. So I just say test website that we can go to the next step, create MySQL database. So when we now go test website msz-days, when we now go to the next step, what you'll see here is I agree to ClearDB's legal terms and that Microsoft will transfer my sub blah, blah, blah. So MySQL is hosted by ClearDB. Yeah? And that's also an option that we have. In the meantime, our website over there should be running. So with that, what happened is our infrastructure allocated resources for you on pre-deployed web servers where now you can upload your web application and operate that in Azure. But before we do that, we link it to our existing SQL database. So we say linked resource, link an existing resource, SQL database. And here we have the GeoNodes actually selected, pre-selected. And that's the one where I use pass at word, WAC. So, done. So now it's linking those reserved web server resources with our existing database. And what we can do now, so that's all done, fine. We can download here on a quick glance, there is somewhere a download publishing profile. Here it is, download publish profile. So that downloads a file that I'll save on the desktop. Save as, and that's the last thing that we are doing, and then we are done. So yes, I know, that's desktop, save. This is a publish profile setting, and now I can go back to Visual Studio and say publish. I import that from the desktop, Tech Days Lausanne. It also, so then I can validate. So these are some pre-generated credentials for a web deploy and FTP upload. You can change those through the portal and assign your own password. So we say next. It detects, based on the linked resource that we combined the database with our website, it automatically detects that and says, do you want to update your connection string with a connection string that points to this nice SQL Azure SQL database? And we say, yes, of course, do that. And now we publish. So what happens now is it's doing a local build and it uploads the whole stuff to the Azure website and it runs there. So, and hopefully if I haven't done a mistake with some of the connection strings, it's running. And it's running here at techdayslausanne.azurewebsites.net. Yeah. And it accesses our database in the cloud. I don't care about virtual machines here anymore. And that's platform as a service. So now let's close that. And show you, I want to show you one last thing. When I go back here, in my website, I have a scale link. And that's interesting. And that's for me the biggest power of the whole cloud story. And in my opinion, you only get that level of elasticity, one of the characteristics of cloud computing, in platform as a service or software as a service. If I know it's going to be a hard weekend for my blog, I know I will need more resources, then I'll just increase the instance count, hit save, and what happens now is that my web application gets deployed to two additional web servers in that case. The load balancer gets reconfigured so that it's using three web servers instead of just one in a load balanced fashion. I leave that then for the weekend, so it's still deploying. Now it's done. Yeah. It's hard to show you the difference now because it happens behind the scenes, but we do run in a load balanced environment now. So now if that hard weekend for my blog is over, and now I pay for these three instances, if my hard, I mean, that's free, so I don't pay anything. I can go, for example, to the reserved instance mode here. Then I get my own machines and I don't run in a shared web hosting environment, which is the default for websites. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I think you get the point. Now the hard weekend is over. I would like to pay less, so I say save. Yeah. Go back to one instance, save, done. For websites, even after preview is over, you will get 10 websites for free, 10 instances. If you select this mode, then you can have paid instances in a shared resource environment, which is very cheap, but offers a couple of additional features like having your own DNS name associated with the website. And if you don't want to run on the same web server along with others, then you select reserved. Then you run on your own servers with Azure websites. And that's just one piece of functionality that we offer in the platform as a service world. In addition to that, and that's going to be my summary now, in addition to that, we have mobile services, which is essentially targeted against device developers. And what we also have is where we are originally coming from, cloud services, which is similar to websites, yet a little bit more complex because it's geared towards multi-tier complex architectures that you run in our data centers with several compute instances that are running their own piece of software and services that are connected through web service interfaces, queues, and things like that. Okay, so with that, I hope I was able to give you an impression of Windows Azure, what the platform is and what the platform is capable of doing. And I also hope that I leave you behind with a better understanding of the differences between infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and maybe also software as a service. I mean, I didn't cover Office 365, but everyone can imagine how that looks like. You don't develop anything and you get the app. Yeah, and with that, we are in time ready for the lunch break. Thank you very much for your attention.